All right, and we are recording. I'm going to make sure we are recording. Yep, everything is looking really, really good. All right, good to go. Okay, so I'll max this out here so I can see. All right, thank you so much, Frank Jacob, for being on Radiant Creators again. And we're excited to talk about a new webinar that you've got out, which is amazing, definitely a bit controversial. At least part three is, that's for sure. And maybe parts one and two just as well. But I got a bunch of questions, and this is a tough one to actually, you know, even interview somebody on, because I've watched it a few times now and I feel like I'm just starting to get it myself. You know, am I qualified to even ask questions yet? I'll try. So thanks, Frank Jacob, for being back on. How you doing today? Your lighting is perfect. And tell us about this new webinar.
Thank you, Craig Simpson. By the way, have you ever thought about your name? Did it ever lead you into exploring the Simpsons legends?
now that you mention it, I'm going to, because I've always liked the name. I know it has some cool history, but I haven't looked into it as deeply as now I think I will.
Well, my name has some interesting history too, because the reverse of my name, Jacob Frank, leads to a very controversial chapter of the history of the Jewish faith. So it's very interesting. And I guess maybe that was one of the reasons, or was in the background, you know, for years, kept coming up. And I was thinking about that a lot. And maybe that had a little bit to do with why I've kind of become, or, you know, made it my passion to explore that part of human history, and you know, with such vehemence, like to just want to get to the bottom of it. But, you know, I'm still on the path, you know, on that, in that direction. But I just think it's interesting that my name mirrored, you know, is leading there of all all places where it could lead, it leads there. You know, this Frankist, you know, movement, which is like, you know, and it's interesting because when I came to do this webinar, I didn't incorporate any of that really so much, although I did have a very lengthy interview with John Lamb Lash, who's really an incredible, like, genius and expert in that mythology. And one of the things we were talking about was using a telescope to look back in time, you know, to see major events that happened. And in our interview, he cited that the date that, you know, that movement emerged, which was this kind of like, you know, this messianic proclamation that came about in a certain sect of Jewish people, which were out of Eastern Europe, which were sort of the descendants of the Khazarians, right? So it's very interesting, this Khazarian element, you know, which is, I think, something which I'd like to explore more intellectually or more scholarly at some point. Maybe even that will be another webinar. Who knows? You know, but all of this material has been kind of floating in the back of my mind. And, you know, you look at the world and you're trying to figure out, like, there's so much chaos going on right now. I mean, indisputably, we're reaching a level of just, you know, information input output that I don't think anyone, any chapter in human history has experienced it, at least not in, you know, in the current wave of humanity. You know, let's just say, you know, we don't know how far it goes back. Nobody knows. It goes back for sure millions of years. And, you know, there's a whole rich body of rise and fall of civilizations, which we know nothing about anymore. We only really know, you know, back to the, you know, a couple thousand years, then maybe back that a couple thousand years more, you know, into the Sumerian time, with the cuneiform tablets being kind of the first written form of information that we have to carry forward. But imagine what was going on before that.
Yeah.
And so looking at the world and the world picture, I'm trying to get to the bottom of, like, why is there, you know, it just seems to be getting more and more chaotic. You would think with all the technology and with all the abilities that we now have at our side to assist us in communicating and traveling and all these things, that it would get better and better. No, it's descending toward war. It's getting worse and worse, right? And the issue of war, of course, is a big topic that keeps coming up. And having been and the son of German immigrants to North America, I grew up in the school system and, you know, heard, you know, of course, and learned, you know, in history class, you know, the history of the 20th century. And of course, ancestors is previous, right?
Yeah.
No, descendants, or is it just, no, my ancestors, whatever, wherever I came from, you know?
Yeah.
There's so much going on in my head sometimes, I wonder, how do I even keep it straight? But anyway, this background of mine is, of course, the Germanic background. And we know, you know, what the history of the Germanic, of the German chapter in 20th century is. And it's very, very horrific. And so, you know, it wasn't until I, you know, finally later in life, in my adult life, moved over here from having grown up in America and having spent time in Canada and traveled around a lot and knowing the traditional standard story, landed here and started, you know, exploring consciousness, you know, which is why I call myself a consciousness archaeologist.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
You know, I started exploring consciousness in topics such as, you know, films like the ones that we ended up putting out, Solar Revolution, and together with Tanya Maidenford, my partner in crime with respect to film, we connected when I was starting to film something called Packing for Mars, which of course is a very interesting topic on its own. I think that's probably where we connected the first time, you know, doing these films that explore the non-standard version of technology, you know, where the element of Mars comes in. In my case, it was inspired by a book called Alternative 3.
Yes.
Which is the breakaway civilization story in a nutshell to Mars, right? So I went after that story, and having opened up to all those things, eventually you reach a point where you kind of go, well, I mean, now we know some of this sort of wacky, really like fringe science and fringe history, but it's always off planet. What about the planet Earth? You know, what about the history that took place here? And, you know, I mean, the one, you know, historical place that we still have kind of unresolved, that's relatively fresh, only four generations away, is World War II. And having immersed myself into the subject matter, I eventually made contact with people over here in Germany who had direct, you know, either relatives or were descendants or were directly connected to those who were involved in that narrative. And that was the first time where I had to sit back and realize, wait a minute, there's another part of that story that never been told. We've only been told this one story of the madman, you know, the madman story, right? And, you know, the more I looked at this other stuff, the more I realized, well, wait a minute, you know, if that stuff isn't right, well, then this single madman story, you know, it's like the single assassin, right? Like, you know, the guy who knocked off Kennedy or the guy who shot Trump, you know, we now know. I mean, it doesn't matter where you look, Craig, there's always more. There's a conspiracy. There isn't a single madman ever.
Yeah.
There's no way a single madman or a single person could organize that kind of event and pull it off without resistance, massive resistance, right? And so I wanted to do something along those lines. And I think the trigger for me was when I came across material, because it's a very controversial topic. In Germany, in fact, it's against the law to even contest certain aspects of that story. So I have to always walk a very fine line with where I go with this. In fact, most of my information, I'm not releasing it in Germany because, you know, I don't want anybody barging my door in for some stupid reason. You know, have the zombies, nothing worse than have the zombies enter your world, you know, your
space,
right? And you know, like the non-game players rule, right? Like come in and just, you know, no way. But what I found was that there is some information that was released, you know, back in the time of the war, which was then re-analyzed 40 years later, which has to do with the leaked, or let's just say documents that were discovered in when Germany invaded Poland at their, you know, when they came in. And this documentation described explicit communication going on between the highest diplomatic levels and the Roosevelt administration.
Yes.
Before, years before a shot was ever fired. And this information is such a bomb, you know, in terms of it's just when they released it, of course, it was the Germans who released it. You know, the Germans almost always want to do things very proper. They're very excellent record keepers. Everything has to be done according to the books, you know, everything has to be written down. Everyone has to be at the right time. You can make an appointment with someone for lunch in Germany 3 years in advance and never talk about it again. And guaranteed you go to that appointment, he's going to be sitting there, he or she.
Yeah.
So this is how, and so the Germans, of course, they took the same approach with the information they found that shocked the hell out of them. And they said, okay, well, here, world, here you go. Look at this. We've been telling you this, and here it is, black and white, right? So what happened? Well, it didn't go that way because nobody believed them, because just like the Biden laptop, you know, and just like the Trump election the first time, everyone tried to come up with this, you know, first it was either the Russians that stole the election, or in the case of the Biden laptop, it was disinfo, Russian disinfo, right? It's the same old scam. And you realize the same old scam keeps happening again and again. And it was no different in this case. So I figured, you know, if I'm going to do a story about that, I want to approach it with something which is black and white. There's no way you can contest this information. It's been, in the meantime, it's been double fact checked. You know, others have come forward with substantiating information. This story is solid, and this story needs to be told, because I've been talking about timelines in the last few webinars, and a lot of the talking I've been doing is about natural versus transhumanist timeline, and the timelines being a meme for the two directions that humanity can move in. One of them takes us away from natural potential, or, you know, God-given, let's say, internal bio hardware, which allows us to expand our consciousness to levels we don't even really know or understand yet. And the other is the idea that humanity's inferior, humanity's got problems, it's a biological inferior thing, you know, the Ray Kurzweil, you know, argument that we need to improve on humanity. And that's the transhumanist timeline. That's the one that is in our face, artificial intelligence. They want to move us into this new eternal, immortal life in an artificial carrier, basically. And so this has been, you know, the big thing. So this story, you know, the idea of timelines has a lot to do with, like, people ask me, how do timelines, you know, how do they exist? Like, what is a timeline? Well, a timeline is where human consciousness invests its energy, its focus on mental energy, also its pocketbook, you know, the money it spends, the interest it keeps in certain topics lead it to follow. And people are herd-like. Humanity is like very herd-like. Humanity is a social construct. We don't like to be alone. We want to be together. We, you know, what's the point of being enlightened if you're the only one that lands there, right? I mean, who are you going to share it with? Kind of boring, right? So we like to be social. We are social. And so, you know, timelines are basically where the social energy of the majority is being led. And, you know, right now it's strongly being led toward transhumanism and things like that. But in order to correct the timeline, we have to understand, where are we now? What are we like? What is reality to begin with? And a big part of that is the historical narrative. In other words, you can, you know, if your decisions about where you are now, the future is controlled by the past, and the past is controlled by the present, right? So whoever controls the present controls the past. So the present is important because it's built on the past lies. Or truths, both. And if we're basing most of our belief about the past, in this case, the 20th century, on lies, then we ought to know about it. And so I knew I had to do that. It's a responsibility as a human being to my other fellow human beings to put forth information of truth and let them for themselves see if it resonates. And of course, in this case, it probably not going to resonate because it contradicts everything we learned in the school books. But that was the starting point, Craig, right? So that was, but I didn't really know how I was going to jump out with this information, because it's, you know, I mean, I think, I don't know if you caught this, and then I'll stop my rant. But the last few days, there was a lot of activity because of an interview of a historian called Daryl Cooper on Tucker Carlson. And Daryl Cooper, leans on a lot on historical evidence and truths that were uncovered by a very infamous historian called David Irving. He just brought out a little teeny, opened a little doorway of truth, respect to one of the main characters in the Second World War narrative that has come out as a big hero, namely Winston Churchill. And that was like, that created such a backlash. So that, you know, that's just an example of what you're facing if you come out with information on that level that contradicts what they want us to believe. Right. So this was a dilemma for me a long, long time. I didn't know how to approach this because I don't want to be arrested either. It's like, I don't want to be carried away in handcuffs just because I put out a stupid webinar, but I'm burning to get the truth out. So you know, that what happened, there was a catalyst moment, like everything in life. You have these moments where suddenly you either meet someone or you see a film or you read the right book or you just have a series of circumstances that happen in a series that give you some input that totally shatters the paradigm. And suddenly it's the glue that glues all the pieces together, not just at the ground level, which is the story, the narrative, but also the 40,000 foot level. Mm-hmm. And that's what I found. And that had to do with something called Gnosticism, which I knew a little about. You know, a lot of us read spiritual books over the years. The New Age movement always hints at the Gnostics, yeah. Right? These early Christians, right? And, you know, that were kind of like this. Yeah, right. Well, yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of, and the thing is, you realize that there's a lot of misinformation about the Gnostics out there. And I just through total fortune and luck, ran into a comparative mythologist who has been studying the Gnostics and the Gnostic material, the Nag Hammadi, which you just showed, for 30 plus years. So he's pretty much hands down, you know, the Zachariah Sitchin of the Gnostics, you could say, right?
Yeah.
And so I just became a little bit immersed in that topic because I realized, wait a minute, you know, if what he's saying and if what he's talking about here is true, then I now have, you know, because you're always trying to figure out, like, look at the horrors that happened in the Second World War, right? We had the Holocaust and all these horrible, like, 60 million people died, right? Why? You know, I mean, is it just that mankind is so stupid and likes to shoot each other? Well, yes and no, right? Because one thing humanity does is something called errors. And errors, it's built into our genome that we make errors because we learn through our errors. We have an amazing genius ability to make mistakes and learn from them, correct them, and make something even better out of the mistake. You know, it's like I used to write music a lot more than I do now. And sometimes the musical mistakes I made in the process of writing were that little magic which made it work, right? Which took it to the other level. So we're used to making mistakes, but there's an element that we learn about in the human story that interferes with us and prevents us from correcting those errors. And then they become evil. And they become maligned, and this thread has been going through society since the very beginning, actually. But we only know, like we said at the beginning, a very small, narrow framework of history, which we have to analyze. But there is a preceding massive amount of information, which, of course, a lot of it got collected in something called the Library of Alexandria, which unfortunately was burned. You know, imagine all the maps, all this. Artifacts, you know, all the stuff the stories of history gone, right? So we're left with this little fragment, and that fragment is what you just pulled out. The Nag Hammadi has a little teeny fragment, 52 codices, which were left behind by the mystics, the mystery school teachers who were the Gnostics to push us forward. And I was so moved by what John Lash has uncovered that I knew that this was the key to why. It even ties into the Second World War narrative. So there was my webinar's incentive in a nutshell. So that's the story. Oh,
no, and that makes that's perfect. And John Lash, one of the a recording of his that you referenced in the webinar was the Wrath of the Demented Father God, and I'll link to that in the show notes. And for anybody who'd like maybe a John Lash crash course, that's a great, just listen to that and just, I guarantee you'll be hooked. That will not be the end of your study. Well, And one of the things that we just saw with Tucker Carlson is how I really believe that the webinar is timely, even if it's controversial, it doesn't matter. That's a good thing. So it's timely because nothing happens there. Yeah. Like there's no one, savior, nor is there one bad guy, you know? And so in a sense, when consciousness is ready for it, I mean, your webinar is going to reach a certain type of person, a certain group, many. It'll even go outside of who it would usually reach, I do believe. But you also look at Tucker Carlson. The fact that you had bless them, but let's say normies, right? And then you had the more spiritually centered eclectic types, all of a sudden just saw what they can handle,
Yes.
Because Tucker's interview with, Darryl Cooper, and bless him for referencing David Irving, one of humanity's great badasses,
Yes.
Everybody got what they could take. So I think that, yours is definitely more hard hitting. It creates a desire for more study. I mean, yours is the beginning of a study course. You know what I mean? It's the beginning of a lot of, I'm already I was reading this now, Hitler's Mountain, which I wanted to reference that real quick after this, but how do you think, isn't that really just uncanny? That's impossible. It cannot be a coincidence, because I love what Tucker Carlson did, because I know we can maybe give it a hard, some people can give it a hard time, but that is what, that's what my 96-year-old dad can take. He can hear that and go, oh, that's interesting. How is this coincidence possible? There's something in the future that's pulling us to a certain timeline.
Right. Well, Craig, when that interview came out, I had just finished part three, the hour, I had finished it and I'm like, whew, and then I turn on media. Right. And I get this message, hey, check this out. I'm like, what? This can't be right. And not only that, but, before, John Nolan was doing a series on the end of religion. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I was immersed in my study. And when I popped up for air, I saw him talking about the end of religion. I didn't know if I should cry or dance, right? I'm like,
yes,
damn, he's already done it, in a way, but he hasn't, it was on topic, but not the topic. But it was just amazing, the coincidence, because obviously it shows me that he's on track on that frequency of, and then, he's been talking to Greg Braden, and Greg Braden's been popping out saying the religion, end of religions, and the end of religion narrative, the meme, if you want to call it in modern terms, that is very current now, because people are realizing that, look, it's the end times. The Christians believe in the end times, right? They believe in the dispensation, the rapture, right? The Jews are the chosen ones, right? Islam has their, end time narrative, and it's all playing, and everyone's waiting for this end thing to happen, right? And it's like and then you realize, wow, isn't that the ultimate setup? And but the thing is, it's not just, that's not the only story. That you have to look at it holistically, right? Where does that come from? Where does that belief system come from? And that's where I think the webinar goes much deeper than Darryl Cooper. He just scratched the surface, and I'm thankful to him for having the balls to do it, because look at the backlash he suffered, right? All those headlines, Jerusalem Times, Washington Post, everyone just slammed him. And they did the standard thing, and it was beautiful. It was the beautiful standard, like the mainstream pulling their pants down themselves in front of the public, right? It's like, look, you don't even have to come and pull their pants down and say, look, no, it's like, we're so stupid, we're going to pull our pants down ourselves by making it incredibly obvious that this guy has hit a nerve of truth, and the only way we can destroy him is to revert to the classic straw man argument. This is exactly the same thing that the Gnostics 2000 years ago faced. This gives us a modern day parallel. If you were doing the webinar, I'm sure you could see exactly in real time and reality going on around us right now, this same pattern being repeated, right? What is it? Someone comes forward, a heretic, right?
Just
means somebody who wants to decide, that's all a heretic is. It's someone who wants to decide for themselves. That's the simple definition of the root of the word. But it's been twisted to mean this, bad, the heretics, right? It immediately conjures up witch burning, you know, all this stuff, right? The heretics, right? Well, heretics are actually needed in our world.
Yes.
And heretics are the ones, and the Gnostics were the heretics of their time. And of course, they were the Daryl Coopers. When the Abrahamic religions were coming into the fore, they came out of hiding because they're kind of like a secretive, anonymous group of people, like scholars, and you know their mysteries, their mystery schools were under attack. So they were kind of pulling back because, hey, who wants to get walked away with handcuffs on, right? And they came forward during this time and said, no, this messianic crap, this redemption thing, sorry, guys, this is the same old stupid program we've inherited from the Sumerian tablets. You know, that, I mean, and that's a whole other thing, too, that you see going on. Anunnaki, right? The Anunnaki. Yes. Everyone believes that we are seeded by extraterrestrials. And they lean all of their work on Zachariah Sitchin, who's the master, right? You know, even Jordan Maxwell, you know, I just caught a video of him like, oh, Sitchin. Sorry, man. If you listen to Lash a little bit, for those of you who just got that link from Craig, you'll eventually hit on the Zachariah Sitchin intel.
Oh, yeah.
The Bilderberger meeting that he was at. I mean, you know, he's a very, he's controlled opposition. And what better way to control people than to give them the narrative of the master-slave race all the way to the very first, you know, the very first evidence of writing. What do we have? The Sumerian kings, right? Mm. The masters and their slaves, right? They came from another planet. And what did they need us for? Well, they're too stupid to synthesize gold with their advanced technology, even though we humans can do it now. But they're too dumb because there were these advanced civilizations that came from another. They had to come all the way to Earth and use us, dumb human apes, and because we're too stupid to mine, had to genetically engineer us to be able to do that. Here we have the perfect setup of the master-slave ideology. That's why, that's the main point. That's why I'm with John Lash, 100 pro on that. There is no way we are slaves. We are not slaves, people. Forget that. It's over. That narrative is destroyed now. It's over. But not enough people obviously know it yet. But there, I mean, it's the truth. We are not slaves. We are the chosen people. Humanity is the chosen race. We've been created, but not by the Anunnaki. So this narrative is causing, you know, and it's very popular. And, you know, it ties into ancient astronauts and, you know, all that stuff that Sitchin, you know, and Erich von Däniken. And there's even an ancient aliens series on Gaia. I mean, everyone's invested in that. And so you got to realize, Craig, I'm going up here against that narrative with a lot of this stuff, even though I'm not originating a lot of it. I mean, I got to credit, you know, where it's due. And I do always mention my sources, by the way. And, you know, one of the mystical, mythological source, of course, I leaned heavily on Lash because I talked to John Lash and we discussed it. And we had several dialogues and I read his material and I did my own research to find correlations to it. And it, like he always says, test it. You can test it. And if you test it, truth has no, is not afraid of being tested. And so I tested it, and guess what? He's right. You know, I mean, it's the best explanation I've found to date. Someone else want to come along and debunk it? Go for it. Like, what I wanted to lay down in the webinar was a place where you've got all these elements, and it might take some digesting, and that's why I call it time capsule, because, you know, it might not be something that people are ready for unless it's been buried in the ground for 200 years, for all I know. But I wanted to send a signal to the future saying, dudes up there, wherever you are in the future, there were some of us back here who did know that there wasn't something quite right. And we found some of the materials that were left behind of truthful stuff that was cataloged at the source. And we're putting it out there so you have something to work on. If you lost it in the future, you can start at least there, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and time capsule for the future. You're right. It is a lot to digest, you know. And I think I have to summarize it as, I can't help but mention, it's like, when you used to get an album or a tape or an 8-track, and the first time you listen to it, you were like, I don't know if I like this.
Then
it ends up being one of your favorites. Yes. And that's always the best. Those are always the best. The ones that were too much at first that then become your favorites. So, it's breaking that new ground. Well,
I love that.
Yeah. So, that tape.
You so everyone like out there, you're going to hate this webinar. Yeah. You're just going to hate it, man. It's just, believe me. But then if you give it a, if you sleep on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It will not let you go. Yeah. It will never let you go, right?
Just give it a day and then you'll be listening to it again, you know? And so, well, it does seem like there's a lot of things in consciousness right now. We talk about things mutually arising, like Tucker Carlson's video and then Time Capsule. Like within our consciousness, there are certain things that humanity just notices and they won't let go, like JFK.
Yeah.
It just won't go away. It's just, and I think at this point, it's just standard knowledge that that story, as the official story, is just not the case. Of course, you know, also World War II, you know, what happened? It doesn't go away. It's like, even though how people are looking is not always as good as it could be, but it doesn't really matter. That story won't go away. It just won't. Like, why do we keep, like, if you turn on the History Channel, why is it always, you know, documentaries about World War II? It's because those might be misleading, but it's because it's in the consciousness. We won't let it go. Also, I think it's becoming conscious now, well, in consciousness of the rise and fall of civilizations. I would say I've seen that quite a lot. And I think that's a growing trend that people are becoming aware of the rise and fall of civilizations. I think, just throwing it out there, that it might be because we are in that time. I think we're at the rise and fall of civilizations. The earth is rebalancing itself. So maybe Western civilization doesn't have the same future as it has in the past. But also the end of Abrahamic religions, like you mentioned, talking about the end of religion. I think that's another one that's in consciousness, because I'm seeing, even though if there is a tale of two timelines and people are going in each direction, we're definitely seeing people cling to the Abrahamic religions like never before. And cling
to
things that give
Brand and all these celebs now jumping on the bandwagon, right?
Better get
on there quick before I go to hell, right? And it's like,
yeah. And people clinging, that you never would have expected to do that. You're like, I just wouldn't have expected this person. I've known people who have just gone off the rails. I'm like, wait a second. You're like, you used to be this like spiritual dude. Now you're a fundamentalist. It's like, okay, cool. You know, you're on your own, bro.
They're missing is the information that I have in the webinar.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you can walk away from, you can still be spiritual, you know, but you don't need to go that direction. You can do it without.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think that it does seem like we're going, now we're getting into what I think we consider, like, I used to like what Rudolf Steiner called it, just spiritual science. And it may not have been his exact definition, but I liked his term, you know, spiritual science, was just that I think we're getting to the point now where we really can have spiritual science, where these things aren't really mysteries to us. We don't need parables. Parables will always be around. They're cute. They're nice. They do offer certain insight when you work on those and let them sink in. But you don't really need parable for science, for truth, for fact. You know, I think now, do you think humanity is at a point where we can say, all right, here's the truth, you know, like boom, 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 here's some bullet points. And now you can meditate on that. We don't need a parable any longer. I think that parables have abstracted us from truth for way too long. Even if there was multiple ways to interpret them, they've been interpreted towards the darkness.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the thing, one of the key things is here that you have to, when you go into this material, you have to ask yourself the question, not just what is the material and what's written, but who wrote it? Who wrote that material? Because that's the key to what's written there, because everything that's written down was written by someone and they had an agenda. And the script writers of the Bible, they had a particular, you know, direction, like, you know, you can hear about those, the Council of Nicaea and certain critical chapters in church history where they cut books away.
Yeah.
There's things I remember when I was like 10 or 12 going like, wait, they cut a book away? No, why? You know, it's like, why not have that in there? They cut stuff away because they were editing. They were editing the script and they were writing the narrative that they wanted people to follow. And so you cannot trust it at all, any of it. You can read it. It's interesting, but it's, you know, you might as well just, there's nothing more valuable in it that you can't find from your own empirical research of your reality right now, in this day, in this moment in society, and the people around you. That's the living Bible, if you want to call it that way.
Yes.
You can find all the information you need to learn and grow spiritually as a person without reading it in a book that it was written with nefarious, or let's just say you don't know what the source was. If you don't know the source, like, it's interesting because you know, there's the Apocryphon of John, you know, which is in the Nag Hammadi. And there's the first apocalypse of James, right? When you're reading that, everyone's going, oh, great, we found the source material for the Old Testament. Well, guess what? No, it's not the same story. They're missing, they left out conveniently a couple of the, probably the most critical aspects of it, especially if we're talking about alien intrusion and humankind. Back then already they were talking about it and people were processing it and talking about it and working on strategies to avoid being abducted and things like that. I mean, what? But that is in the source material. I mean, there's these Archon beings, right? We've heard about them.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about Archons, you know, oh yeah, they eat, they feed on your dark stuff and they get you all, you know, they eat human, you know, emotion, right? But they don't really tell you what Archons really are. They're just presumed to be this parasitical species out there.
Yeah.
But no one knows the true story of the Archons. And the Gnostics, they documented the true story. They wrote it down. And if you're going to go to source material for your intel, you know, you don't want to just go to the neighborhood channeler and just, oh, yeah, Archons, right? I mean, how do you trust where they're getting their information? Especially since Archons are lurking in the, you know, the interstellar sphere, that the, you know, the field out there that could send messages to all the channels. Okay, oh, they're right, getting ready to channel about us. Quick, come on, here it is, right? So they pump the information. That, how do you know you can trust that? But the Gnostics, they spent millennia going through this material, comparing notes. They recognized and they documented these beings. So we know where they came from. Mm-hmm. We know who they are and we know why they're here. And if we know that, that's very constructive information. You don't get that in the Bible. Sorry, there's great parables, you know, but in the end, you know, like, who left out the important details? And as soon as I hear that, I'm done with it. It's like, I can't, that for me, that's just toilet reading. You know, I mean, it's fun, you know, some interesting stories of the past, right? How much of that is true and how much of it is manipulated? That's about all I can, you know, glean from it at this point. Even though it was the first published book, which gave it incredible power in the modern times for brainwashing and mind control. But still, you cannot trust it. You cannot trust the source. Look at the people that are running around in the robes pitching that book at us. Do they have a great history? Are they upstanding citizens? Excuse me, look at some of the scandals that we've seen emerging in the church in the last dozen years. If they were onto the truth, man, that was enlightening them as people and would enlighten humanity, you would not be seeing those scandals surfacing. This dark closet of what's going on and what's been swept under the carpet, that's all in there. It's all part of that karmic energy that's within that material that you have to sort through. And if you're not on a spiritual level high enough to get past that, you're going to get sucked right into it. Then you got the Schofield Bible, Dispensationalism by John Darby. This stuff was all invented later and brought here in the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century.
My 100%.
Funded, you know, think tanks. Interesting. Food for thought there, right? So,
oh, yeah.
Taking us off another deviation.
Oh, so no. It's all good. Yeah. Well, yeah, it does make me feel like the Abrahamic religions, kind of like I look at law, it really is the rope around the cow's neck dragging it to the slaughterhouse, you know. And that's the thing, is where you're right, if a person has the right spiritual energy, the right awareness, then they can see it and go, okay, they can discern. But, you know, humbly I would say most people, well, look at the lives they're living, and you can say that, no, you know, if you hang out in front of the church on the corner when everybody gets out on Sunday, and when they go in, they walk in miserable, they walk out miserable. And that was a weird insight I had as a little kid going to Sunday school. That, you know, they talk about, oh, you go to heaven if you're good. And I thought, but everybody's a bunch of assholes here. Like, I don't care where you put them. If it's just more of this, well, great. Now they don't have to poop, but they're still assholes.
I remember some of those cartoons where you saw some guy in a parking lot waving his fist at this woman, right? And then the next slide in the cartoon is they're sitting beside each other in church, right? So
yeah, exactly. I love it, right? Well, part one of the webinar is, you know, Sophia, and then of course part two is the Archons, and part three is revision. So, and you did mention the Gnostics. So the Gnostics, so the Sophia narrative, I guess we could call it, you know, if we define myth as the way that John Lash did, I called it narrative. Then what is the Gnostic Sophia story? in a nutshell, just so people have an idea of what part one is, because that's something that was new to me. I never understood Gnosticism from the perspective of the webinar.
Well, you know, the word Sophia, of course, has a direct relation to the definition of wisdom, right? So the wisdom Sophia, right? And, you know, philosophia, right? This is the root of that word. It's been built into a lot of the, you know, knowledge-based information, because it is, you know, the Sophia is the origin of the human race. And that was never, you know, clear to me either, because I used to hear all kinds of stories about, you know, Sophia and, you know, like, what is her role here really with respect to humans and things? And what I didn't know was, of course, the Gnostics actually had documented that story. And mm-hmm. John Lash, you know, went through that material and he reconstructed, you know, a fuller narrative, a mythology around the material that he found, which was, you know, stuff that the Gnostics, the mystery school teachers, had gathered and put together. So you can find, you know, correlations to every aspect of, and he calls it the fallen goddess scenario is the narrative, as he calls it, the FSG or FGS. And this is the description of how, you know, well, what do you mean, Sophia? You know, we came from Sophia, made us, we are from Sophia. Well, that story has an origin that has to do with the creation of the universe itself. And so, you know, I couldn't just dive into the, and I actually didn't even plan on putting the fallen goddess scenario narrative into the webinar. And it wasn't until Tanya and I were traveling in the States and I was reading her, you know, the story, and she's like, you know, I said, and then I had this idea, hey, I should pepper this into the webinar because that's kind of part of it. And so that's why you see Tanya Maidenford in the webinar, because she's like, I've got to be that voice. And I'm like, yeah, you do. And she was the perfect one to do it. So she is, you know, she's the one telling us that story, which I think is really cool. And that story, basically, for me to include it, I couldn't just jump into that story. You have to have some background information about science to make sense of that story. Otherwise, it's just another, you know, how do I believe that's true? Is that just someone's new version of a story? Like, how do I believe that one versus the other ones that are out there? Which one has more validity, right? Well, the thing is, the Sophianic narrative actually can be tested through science, and it's actually reflected in the mm-hmm. most current state-of-the-art science that's out there. And that has to do with plasma physics, and it has to do with electric universe. And for most people who don't know, and that's most people don't know anything about those things, I needed to do kind of a crash course in that. So you have to understand that that, you know, there's a Russian scientist called Titovich who did some experiments in a lab with plasma, and he found out that plasma develops intelligence. See? That's the confirmation from the universe.
Yeah, it does.
Develops intelligence. In a lab, he did these experiments in very small, minute amounts of plasma, but he found it was like kind of like a super AI that actually began to form intelligence, right? So, and there's papers, and I reference them. And when you watch the webinar, I go deeper into it. What you find out is that, you know, if that's happening at a laboratory level with minute amounts of plasma, well, we're now discovering that the entire universe is 99.9% plasma.
Yes.
Plasma is everywhere, right? And, you know, we have this legacy science, let's call it, which is... Yeah. You know, school book science of particle physics. Now the most progressive form of it is quantum physics, still borrowing on the particles and the idea of particles and the Big Bang, you know, and all this stuff that had happened, and the relativity theory, and the, you know, the more advanced levels of relativity theory by Chiron and these people that are you know, trying to develop it. But none of these people are dealing, they can't explain big holes in their theories. And so they've developed a big hole in their theory, which they, to plug it, they've developed something called dark energy.
Yeah.
And along with dark energy, dark matter. So a lot of people think they're cool and are at parties, you know, holding a drink, they want to talk about dark matter and dark energy. You know, for someone who doesn't know anything, it sounds cool, especially if you read a couple of like sound bites or go online and do some Instagram, you know, videos, and you can get up to par on on, you know, dark matter. Sorry. But, you know, people go to parties and they think they're smart because they're talking about dark matter, but nobody knows really what it is. And the problem is, if you break these things down, you realize that they're, even the dark matter model doesn't make sense. And you can see that this idea of the Big Bang theory, it doesn't make sense. The more you dig and drill into it, the more problems come up. This cannot be the science moving forward. And out of all of it, except with the exception of quantum physics, consciousness never plays a role. So what the plasma model actually tells us is that, as we now know from Titovich, who proved it, that plasma actually is consciousness. And the more expansive plasma is, the more complex it is, right? And, you know, there's something called dusty complex plasma, because for plasma to have anything worthwhile, like to make anything, it has to have dust. Dust with plasma and energy, and presto, you have planetary laboratories, basically, right? So for you to understand that this being, Sophia, came and, you know, made humanity, it just sounds like a fairy tale. But if I lay out for you the physics behind how that actually would work and prove it, that it actually is scientifically proven fact, you can take that leap into the more avant-garde. You know, one of the things John Lash said to me after it came out was like, maybe we should put something in there about, you know, because it sounds like science fiction to people and they'll think it's fiction. And especially people that are in left brain, they're not going to see the right brain. I'm like, no. You've got to have left brain, right brain in there, because it's going to tickle both sides, right? And the fact is that even if the story has an element of mythology, science fiction to it, it's still solidly based on the Gnostic teachings. And so it gives us the actual story of the creation of humanity from that perspective that was put down by these Gnostic mystic mystery school teachers thousands of years ago, who are, you can imagine the advanced levels of society that we've had that have come and gone. So to think that only now are we able to think about complex theories like plasma and universal galaxies and that kind of stuff. No, I think we were probably much further along in previous versions of humanity that have come and gone. And the mystery schools were all about preserving that information and keeping it alive and moving it forward into the future so we could build humanity into what we're supposed to be, this genius species. But instead, there's been this interference, right? But we'll get to that later if you want.
Yeah.
But the idea of this, the Sophianic narrative, is that this being, these energies that exist in the universe, these plasma energies, they have identity. They form identity. They have gender. They don't have an anthropomorphic form. You know, they don't look like humans or anything like that, but they're more like serpentine. And if you look out there in the galaxies, you can see the formation of the galaxies reflecting that serpentine shape again and again and again, but like in a fractal way, all the way out to the edges. And these energies, they have consciousness, and their consciousness are, those are like, there's a name for them that the Gnostics have. They're called aeons. Mm. These aeons are, it's a better word than God, you know, like whatever, the gods. But in a way that they are the God, if you want to say that or use that word, God would be an aeon. An aeon is this super luminous, highly charged energy form, consciousness with identity, with a gender that, of course, you know, is creative, and it creates. And one of the things that was created in our particular version of humanity, you know, the galaxy, the universe is large, and there could be billions of aeons out there, but the one in our local neighborhood is the Milky Way galaxy. And so the aeons who created us, they reside in the Milky Way galaxy, and they, the creation of us came from that galaxy. And that story is kind of where it starts, and it turns into, you know, the one of the aeons, Sophia. Normally, they do not participate in the experiment. They'll create an experiment, like a consciousness. They'll create like a genome, and they'll release it, and they'll see what happens. You know, in most cases, they just let it go. And either it grows, and in the case of humanity, there's a story that there was 9 other previous versions that went out there into the Milky Way galaxy, and they all came and went. And Sophia, being the creator of that Anthropos genome, was watching the 10th one and going, I don't know, man, is it going to go down the tubes again? You know, and it's like, essentially, you know, she got so involved in commitment to making sure that it survived that she breached the Aeonic protocol, if we shall say it that way. She decided to participate directly in the experiment, and that set in motion a new form of chaos. And out of that chaos came, as a result of breaching this Aeonic protocol, came something before we came into the world, and that was the Archons. And that's the story of these Archons and how they came about, which were not intended to be, and they, because they were not created in balance with her and her partner, her male counterpart, Thelite, they were aberrations. They were never fully realized in terms of what the genome of humanity was given, endowed with. We were endowed with, you know, these amazing talents and the creative, you know, drive and the divinity. We have a spark of the same creative energy that these Aeons have, and we were to fulfill that. And yet, here was this other aberrant side effect that came as a result of this commitment to get involved and to breach this protocol that set in motion what we're experiencing in the world right now. That's kind of the nutshell behind that whole story.
Yeah, and that's, and like part one is, of course, Sophia, and that actually, that's an incredible firming up of Sophia and the Gnostic, well, research that was, that brought that forth. And I would say, for anybody, if you're watching the webinar, this is going to be incredibly helpful. I think that actually, that segment right there, if you stuck it in there, would actually be awesome. That couple of minutes as part of part one, that really summarizes it incredibly. I can tell after you made the webinar, of course, it's a lot more in your mind right now.
And right.
The part one is awesome, but yeah, that what you just said actually would make it even more powerful. Is that really summarizes it very powerfully. Well, I think that consciousness right now is becoming aware of the plasma and also electric universe, and even really electroculture has been, it's kind of seeing a reemergence. You see in people's garden, the copper spirals, you know, we don't need to use chemical fertilizers and all that's absolutely silly. And so it's in the consciousness. And I definitely think that now some people are calling the Aeons, you know, angels and demons. Okay. One could see it that way. But yeah, also, egregores, I think right now at this time, you know, an egregore is, of course, a thought pattern, a group that has created a certain, it's a group created being. And I think that at this time, I almost feel like egregores are becoming more in the consciousness of humanity. And it's almost like I see them lighting up, like when there's lightning in the clouds, I see boom. It seems like egregores, especially in a time of splitting timelines and clinging, I'm seeing egregores become way more powerful than I've ever seen them. Especially, like for instance, when I was, we were out walking the dog last night, which you just heard commenting on the video. And in every single big front window, you see the TV, they were all except one. Not that we're spying on people, but you can see it. They were all watching the debate. And I look at it and go, wow, look, you can have like, you know, archonic influence, like archonic infection one or archonic, or archonic infection two, whichever owner or ruler you would like, your Abrahamic savior, your absolute good and absolute evil, whichever way you want to see it, you know? And I would say that, especially watching the debates, which we did not, but walking by and just seeing them and seeing the archonic coming out of each one of them, I go, man, the egregores, if I looked in the sky, I probably would have seen it lighting up with the egregores' power. How do you feel about that, egregores right now?
Oh, yeah. No, egregores is a big topic, you know, because that's kind of really what we're egregores are. You know, like you said, they're manifestations of group thought and group energy. Yeah. And one thing that humans will often underestimate, because we've been told, you know, we're just these sinners, right?
Yeah.
Is that we are powerful divine creators. We've been given the same power that our creators have. And that's why we're here. That's part of the experiment, to manifest that. So when we collectively use our mind to manifest, The downside of it is when it's being steered and led by an agenda that is nefarious, that is keeping us from realizing that full potential, when it's based on authoritarian systems and, you know, collective ideologies that, you know, like communism and stuff like that. These are the most horrible expressions of collective group thought, creating egregores, which manifest in the world as total negative structures, right? An egregore can also be a nation, you know, an egregore can be a religion. All these things are different levels of egregores. Egregores can be something that, you know, a monk can manifest, you know, like as a shadow being that'll appear, right? That they communicate with when they're working out a certain problem. You know, there's all kinds of levels of egregores because we have this amazing ability to create things and we don't even realize we're creating it. So yeah, we tend to think that they're outside of us, being something affecting us externally that we react to instead of taking responsibility for the fact that, no, it's our investment in a certain idea that is giving energy for these things to take shape. You know, for me, instead of watching Twiddledee and Twiddledum on that show last night, I mean, that's a waste of my personal energy because you have two completely scripted narratives running, which are totally against anything to do with human evolution. This is all just, they didn't talk about anything meaningful. You only need to read, you know, John Rappaport's quick summary of what took place, and bingo, you got it down, you know, because they didn't talk about mRNA. They didn't talk about, you know, Beetlejuice. They didn't talk about central banking. They didn't talk about any kind of a solution to fix the economy. They didn't talk about anything. They just wasted everyone's time, and everyone's stuck on this egregore concept of that system. And you're seeing it more and more. And those of us who are starting to break through those patterns and display them, you realize that, for, let me give an example. I mean, just the idea that Trump would be, they were fact checking him all the time, right? Well, he said something about eating cats in Minneapolis, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And right. And then right then and there, the guy, you know, was there with the, oh no, we got the fact on that one. This is the, that guy said, this isn't true. That's not happening. The mayor said that wasn't true. And blah, blah, blah. Why would he, how would the guy know that Trump was going to pull that one out of his bag? No, it was scripted. That's why. It was scripted, and Trump played it so that he looked like a fool, right? It's just, the guy is a fool. I'm sorry. He's not in command of the Sophianic, goddess-given powers of manifestation that we have. And he's leading us like a Pied Piper into another polarity of the egregore. And she, Harris, is leading us down another one. And the way, all it's doing is leading us and it's distracting us from what we really could and should be doing, which is to break away out of those patterns, to see them. I mean, I show some of the stuff in the webinar about how there's this tradition to carry the narrative of World War II forward. And you can see it. I show it. Like, you know, Reagan, I show Trump. You know, they're still spewing the same script again and again and again. Why? It's like David Irving. You know, we mentioned that. And I also have him, peppered in. And he made a very profound statement when he was talking about how the historical narrative is formed. He says that it's not based on anything that has to do with facts that are tethered, as he says, to the ground. What happens is that when you come in as a wide-eyed, you know, open-minded student of history into university, the first thing you get is a set list of books you need to learn and memorize, because that's where we're going. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to follow that set list and you don't want to, you know, repeat the same jargon with your new interpretation of it, well, guess what? You're just not going to get the degree that your daddy paid for. So you're going to either follow the story script, or you're going to veer off and you might as well quit school right then and there, because you're not going to get anything. And the professors that are teaching the scripts and that are handing out the set list, they've learned long ago that it's easier to go with the flow and follow and just pass along the same set list that they had, maybe a couple of variations, but still. And so what happens is you build up, and I think Irving calls it like a Goodyear blimp, you know, like one historian will float a theory and it'll pump it into the thing and it'll start to float. Others will run behind it and start pumping it up, and it begins floating around, and everyone's running after like dogs sniffing their tails, but they're not going anywhere. They're just repeating the same narrative again with a new angle, maybe a fresh, but it's the same narrative. Nobody's learning anything. And we're at that point in society right now where we've reached this, we're all running in these same old patterns again. That's why they say history repeats itself. Because if you don't know the real history, yeah, damn right, it does repeat itself. Absolutely guaranteed. I can guarantee you it'll repeat itself. But so the challenge now, the real challenge is to have the guts and the balls, like a guy like Daryl Cooper, to come forward and put his name on the line, or like, you know, me, to put my name on the line and put this stuff out there on the risk of being shot. You know, this is why, I mean, I did a show with John, we recorded the other day, and I like this idea of the opening scene of Dances with Wolves when Dunbar, you know, he's fed up, you know, they're at a stalemate in this battle in Tennessee, and he's going to lose his leg anyway. He figures, what the hell? And he asks his guy, what's going on, man? And everyone's just sitting around waiting. Generals are, you know, with their goggles, right? No one is not moving anywhere. It's stuck. This is a perfect example of what I'm describing here. And then Dunbar, you know, he sees this horse, beautiful horse. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go out. I'm done with this. I'm going to go out with a flash, right? The glory. But I want something to move, right? So he gets on the horse, and we all know the scene. He leans back, and everyone tries to shoot him. And then as a result of the distraction, it gives the side that is paying attention that he's on the advantage to storm the scene and wipe out the stalemate and win the battle. And this is where we're at in society right now. I'm that guy on the horse, like Daryl Cooper. You know, it's like we all need to be the guy on the back of that horse going out there and saying, you know what, I'm ready to break the narrative. Let's do it. Let's just throw some wrenches into it and see what happens, right? Because the human genius has the ability to make sense out of it. Even if it's totally corrupted and mistakes, we will sort it out and we will put that puzzle piece together eventually. And we're not doing it, you know, which is, so this is what happened in a debate like that. It's just another egregore, and there's egregores everywhere, all around us.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's a flywheel. Like, it has this inertia to it. And one of the reasons we didn't watch it is that even if you are a powerful individual, you're present, you know, when you watch the egregore, when you watch the debate, it's going to affect you. It's almost like we have to stop, you know, looking.
Yes.
I think that pull can be one. We got to pull the plug. I stop looking because it will influence you. You will walk away from that experience archonically influenced. And that's the question I wanted to ask about. I've had you for just over an hour, so we'll wrap up soon. But I wanted to ask you, do you believe that people can see the archonic influence? What I mean by that is those who are especially like the big players, you know, I just believe that the archonic influence, and of course, chapter 2 of the webinar is all about archons and archonic influence, and that's definitely powerful stuff. We could go forever just talking about that, but I want to keep this somewhat in a good capsule of time so that it gets out there and people see it. I think very clearly, I see and I feel the archonic influence in individuals, in egregores, in political parties, in situations around the world right now where people are being genocided and things like that. And to me, it couldn't be more obvious, but I do literally think it is a spiritual sight that I hope humanity is beginning to have, where you just go, oh, that's archonic, and that's it. Yeah. You see it and you're no longer fooled.
Yes. Totally. Yeah. No, the thing is, the archons are here to prevent humanity from reaching its divine intention, which is to manifest this genius level of creativity, to live in harmony with each other, to recognize, you know, the diversion, the various races and species of humanity are all under this anthropic genome divine experiment that's going on, and we need to celebrate each other. We need to celebrate, what we can do and learn what we actually haven't even manifested yet, or maybe that we have manifested in a previous ancient civilization that left behind some amazing buildings, which we're now wondering where the hell they came from. But basically, it shows you that we have had, and we still have before us, this ability to create something spectacular. But every time you see something out there which is creating authoritarian systems, which is pushing war, which is creating chaos, you know that is the archontic signature. When there's envy involved, when there's brutality and violence involved, when there's an endless, mindless pursuit of just stubborn violence, you could just say to for its sake only, then you know that's the archontic signature. Because really what we should be doing is reaching our hands to each other and saying, wait a minute, you know, what America should do with respect to Israel, say, you know what, dudes, we gave you guys, I don't know, let's total it up. Oh, wow, we gave you like $534 billion over the last 10 years. You know what? You've had enough. That's it. Sorry. Figure it out. You got some neighbors there. They're your cousins genetically, by the way. The closest thing to you, you know, genetically, you should be brothers with them, and you should sit down at a table and figure the damn thing out. Because you know what? We got our own problems. Figure it out and drop the idea that you're someone special above anyone else. Because guess what? You know what? That's called master race ideology. And whenever you see master race ideology, meaning someone is better, this goes back to what we talked at the beginning, Anunnaki, Sumerian, right? Why, you know, who wrote those cuneiform tablets? Can you answer that? Mm. I mean, I know that John Lash would probably know, but guess what? He can't answer either. You know, he says the best guess is those were the court scribes of the kings back then. So what are they going to put on their tablets? Are they going to put down, oh, everyone is equal and there is no royalty, there is no special, everyone is on par, we're equally, no, they're going to put on, we're kings and you people are our servants. And they're going to pass that forward. And that model is master race ideology in a nutshell. When someone thinks that they're special and that they've been given divine, you know, a spark of divine, you know, recognition from some God, guess what? Wrong, because if you want to go to the source materials that are written down, well, the Gnostics, thankfully, those few shreds that were passed forward and we found them in 1945 show us that, yeah, that isn't the real narrative. The real narrative is that we're all equal. So we need to get away from these systems, and that's how we do it. We need to bust those systems. Whenever we have, you know, and I'm, you know, this is the discussion that I have a lot with Tanya lately, is about Jesus, right? I mean, you know, is Jesus an egregore? You know, I mean, Jason Brashears did a whole show about he never existed. Johnny Enoch did a Facebook post saying, well, there's some research saying he didn't exist, but he did exist. And it's like, there's this, but look it. I mean, look, this is such a touchy subject that, you know, like, and this is what I was talking with Tanya about. It's just like, if you're going to be throwing Jesus out as well, you're going to create such a rift, you know, in the canyon. No one's going to make it over to your webinar because they're going to, oh, I can't accept any of that because, you know, he says Jesus is blah, blah, blah. Maybe think of it in terms of, you know, like that Jesus was a, let's give it the credibility that he really was this guy that came here that had this, he was one of the first enlightened dudes on the planet, okay? And he handed forward, you know, some information, some intel to help us to reach that same state. Because didn't he say, or they're saying, these miracles you shall do and more and all this stuff like that? Well, guess what? Where are those people doing the miracles? Why don't we do the miracle? Like, we should be doing those miracles. So, you know, that's what we can use a Jesus for. And an egregore serves that purpose.
Yes.
It can be very, very positive and powerful for us to, hey, a nation is a great egregore. It's like when we agree we're going to create a nation because we want to reach bigger goals together, that's a powerful, positive thing. Just not when it, you know, is a nation that thinks that they're the chosen people and everyone else is going to be their slaves. That's slave master ideology. Sorry, it doesn't work that way. This isn't what the design was. And so, you know, so this is one of the things that I think people need to realize moving forward. If we're going to fix these problems in the world, we need to, it's like humble, you know, it's humility, right? To be humble and realize, okay, look, let's just take a step back, calm down, everyone, drop the weapons, let's figure, right? And that's where we need to get to. So whenever you see the Contra thing happening, and, you know, the Archons would love it, they would love it, and they probably succeeded before to bring us to the point where we destroy our civilization, we destroy our culture. We did it in the Second World War. Come on. I have a picture on my Facebook of Dresden, and circa turn of the century, 1914, I think. Beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful buildings, beautiful fashion, you know, calmness, right? I mean, where is that? We lost it. Why? Because the Archons have manipulated certain narcissistic psychopaths on our planet to decide, you know what? We're going to make up a narrative and we're going to give us, that'll give us the authority to go into those beautiful places and just burn them.
Like, yeah,
get rid of them, right? like, sorry, you know, if they're burning, like, you know, some ruin, some ancient, like, shed, you know, that was, like, you know, left over, that had no value, and they want to make something nice, great. But they're not doing this. They're burning down the beautiful works of art, the works of culture, the works of literature. You know, and you can look at it in terms of cultural Marxism. What are they doing in that? They're actually forbidding things like Shakespeare to come into our schools because, you know what, it's not conform with the new wokeness out there, right? So mm-hmm. this is how the archons operate. And so you can see those patterns. And once you identify those patterns as an individual, you are very powerful. You can say, you know what, I'm turning the TV up. I don't care about that stupid debate. I'm not going to learn anything out of that stupid debate.
The archon debate. Yeah, I'm not interested. And well, right. And part three, so we've kind of, in a way, talked a lot about part one and two. And then, of course, part three is where it really gets fun. And what I would do is give people, like, some cliffhangers here. I'd say, well, Jesus was anointed. That's mentioned, you know. Well, who anointed Jesus? Right. What, you know, who anointed the egregore? There's one you'll find out in part three. Also, who was Karl Marx? You know, who his lineage tells you a lot about who he was. And along with Churchill, wasn't the greatest guy. And Eisenhower, he signed orders that killed a lot of innocent POWs after the war, you know.
Yes.
And these are things that we should know. And, you know, Sandinisen, I can never quite say his name right. But if Karl Marx is, you know, well, look into, you guys find out watching part three, who he was, where he came from, and why he was writing that. And if that really was the foundation of Bolshevism, right, then a great line that Solzhenitsyn said was, you must understand the leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of human remorse. That's archonic influence.
Yes.
And if you want to learn more about that, like take all these things we just talked about it, we just talked about and ground that into history, which explains exactly why we are where we're at right now and where we're going. Part three is for you. So
well, part two has all that stuff with the Marx.
Oh, part two.
Yeah,
okay. That's
part two, right? So yes, but that needs to be understood before you're ready for part three. Because if I would have thrown part three at you, that would have just been another David Irving giving you some intel about the narrative being false, right? And there's more going on. It would have been, that's interesting. But after you understand, like, you got to figure out, like, why and where is this, like, why does this keep happening? And so that's what two is all about. It's about looking at, you know, that aspect of that narrative. Where did it come from, right? So you said the anointing of you know, of the Messiah, right? The Jesus was anointed, right? And they say he was anointed by, you know, this floating being Melchizedek, right? Well, the Zedek, you know, that's the key word here. So when you're watching too, you will understand what Zedek really came from, what it means. And you'll understand a little history, some real history, ancient history that was preserved by these amazing friends of ours. Like they'd be like us now in the past, right? They'd be just like us. They'd be those kind of people that would be discussing the stuff, throwing it on the table, having mystical experiences, bringing them back and saying, hey, this is what I saw. What did you see? And, you know, they created the groundwork and the foundation of a very solid historical background of the story of humanity. And the story of that whole chapter of, you know, what we just mentioned plays very, very significantly into this master race ideology. And you have to understand where that came from. Otherwise, you won't understand why suddenly certain people believe certain things in the world, right? You might think they're justified, and many people do. But I can show you and prove to you, and we do in the webinar, that there's a narrative that led to that justification. And that narrative, you have a right as a heretic to choose whether you want to believe that narrative or not. And that's all we're doing. We're just saying, look, here's the intel that was left behind by people that would know. The crazy dudes that were into the fringe science that we are in this day and age back then. Just time travel back. We're going to time travel back to that time. We're going to tell you actually even the exact moment where the penetration came into civilization. It's a fascinating story. I mean,
And also, when, as you mentioned, people believing things that seem, well, crazy, and you can definitely see them as being archonic. there is, and you go into this in the webinar as well, the effect of epigenetics, how outside of us affects our gene expression, affects, well, quite literally what you think about, you manifest ultimately. And so in a sense, epigenetics is not only influencing our genes, but what we are manifesting. And so then you get into, you know, the archonic influence, and you realize it's going straight through to your expression, to your manifestation. So when people believe things that are unbelievable to the aware, awake person, realize that it is, they're literally being influenced. So if you don't want to be a robot for archons, then you want to watch this webinar. Also, you talk about something, I have not read it all yet, but it's out there and people can get it. The German white paper, you know, and that's definitely something that I think, I'll link to it in the show notes. It's amazing to check out, especially if you have a German history like I do, Uncle Franz, you know.
That was the outgoing point of me even doing the webinar. And it's so extensive. I couldn't, you know, I had to really mull my brains. How am I going to get to the gist of that document without boring the hell out of people for hours and hours, right? So I had to hit the essence of it. So, you know, if you don't want to read all of it, or if you don't want to get into it, or you can do it later, watch the webinar and then go and you can, you know, go deeper into it.
It'll have context.
Many more pages of information like to read, to go through, to get, but essentially the essence is there in the webinar behind what, it's like being a fly on the wall, I like to say.
Yeah.
Of the people that were behind, the forces behind moving us into the most deadly conflict that ever happened on the modern planet.
I like to certainly not making light of it, but I like to think of it as the German White Album anyway, but it kind of is, you know, and this book as well, Hitler's Mountain, you kind of start the whole presentation with a reading from that. And I'll let people get the webinar and watch, but it's amazing how it starts with a premonition and then we see that premonition come to fruition as we go through the webinar. And so it's quite amazing how it all was predicted, you know, but we can change the predictions of the current world.
We're at that critical point right now, again, where there's another war looming, you know, and there's all this, the same ingredients are in the pot and there's already a cook there turning the stuff and the heat's getting, you know, they're getting ready to cook that sucker.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could come up now and we could just say, you know, we're cutting the gas off. You can stand there all you want and keep turning, but guess what? It's not going to cook.
Yeah.
We are the ones that decide to go to war. Even if the Archons work, they need us to do their bidding. They can't do it here. They can't penetrate here into our world physically for long periods of time. They may be able to come in for short bursts, and that's a whole other topic. Mm-hmm. But their best form of penetration is telepathically, mentally. They can get in here and they can corrupt us like a parasite, like Watiko. And they get in and they disrupt it and they bring us to war and they're like, yeah, man, we did it again, right? They just leave enough of us around so that the cycle starts over again so that they don't want to kill off the host like a good parasite, right?
Yeah.
You can't kill off the host completely or you're dead too, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, so let's break the cycle. So, all right, this has been amazing. Thank you, Frank Jacob, for being on. You know, I got so many more questions I could ask, but let's keep this poignant and powerful and get people to get the webinar. So where can people find the webinar?
Well, the easiest place is cyberhive.tv. If you can't remember that, or if your spelling's off on it, then my name, frankjacob.com. has a menu at the top and there's a fast link directly to that webinar page and all the I like to actually more or less think of them more as master classes at this point, but all of them there, you know, and it's the top one and you can check it out and hopefully you will, because I think it's you know, I like to think of it as it's got everything in it that you need to kind of make sense and help you to recreate your world without all the dogma and without all the baggage, and give you a fresh set of eyes on everything. So
absolutely. Yeah. And of course I'll link to it wherever you're listening to this, look at the notes. It'll be there, you know, links to all of this. Well, Frank Jacob, thank you for being on the show. This is awesome. I'm glad we're getting this out. I'm still so inspired by the webinar. I'm going to watch it and listen to it again. It's great. It will definitely, anybody who's interested, it will be amazing in itself, but also it's going to create a lot of areas of study that you'll probably go down. And so it won't start or end with this webinar. So, you know, take care, everybody. Thank you, Frank Jacob. Good to go.
Thanks for being such a good conscious person, Craig. And thanks for having me.
Thank you. You too.